Support for this episode comes from Adidas. We all know, when you go on your daily run, you need to feel progress. But every time your foot hits the ground, braking forces slow you down. But what if your running shoe could turn these forces into forward motion? Adidas explored 5 million lattice variations to find one cell that redefines what a running shoe midsole can do. Their 4D Forward running shoe is designed to move you forward by turning vertical pressure into forward motion. Every single stride. Adidas 4D Forward, designed to move you forward.
Batter up.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 97 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Cerevich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Kellyanne Healy. Hello, Kellyanne.
Hello, Allison. Hello, Linda.
Hello.
Hello.
Every time, I'm sorry.
Even though our hellos are cheerful, there's not much cheerful to discuss regarding the Mets. Since the last time we recorded this, the Mets have lost 3 out of 4 to the Marlins, and then were swept by the Phillies over the weekend. So they went from like a 3-game lead in the NL East to 2.5 games back of the Phillies and 0.5 game back of the Braves. So the Mets are in third place right now, and they are currently in weather delay against the Nationals as we record this on Tuesday night, August 10th, with a potentially lengthy weather delay ahead, but already losing that game as well. So yeah, things are really, really bleak, and they look awful right now on like every level and every facet. Like, mostly the hitting, they're just not hitting as a team, especially with runners in scoring position, but really at all. And even though his like overall numbers as a Met so far aren't like super good, if you look at them like just on paper, like Javier Baez being potentially hurt is a problem because he's basically played a role in the very few games that they have won over the past like week and a half.
And they have no shortstops currently.
Yeah, it's Jonathan VR is the only guy on the team that can play shortstop right now.
Blender's injured.
Who's healthy?
Baez is injured.
Guillorme
injured.
Peraza.
Peraza's injured. Like,
so it was such that when Baez hurt himself. So Baez hurt himself on Sunday swinging the bat. It looked like he like winced in pain when he was swinging, and he like grabbed his hip. And so they pulled him with what they called hip tightness. And, you know, shortly after that occurred, they pulled Wilfredo Tovar from his game in Syracuse because they need another player on the roster that can play shortstop if Baez goes to the IL. Right now, it's looking like he won't. They're claiming that, of course, because it's the goddamn Mets, they're saying that actually, and he's not in the lineup. He was not in the lineup tonight before the rain rolled in. And the Mets were saying, you know, actually, it's not his hip tightness why he's not in the lineup. He's experiencing some lower back tightness, but don't worry, he's available off the bench. And you're just like, so he has two different types of tightness and he's available off the bench. Very, very smart. Good.
I know we'll get to this later, but is Zach Scott really surprised why nobody on this team trusts the training staff?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like we still don't have a diagnosis for DeGrom either.
Yeah. DeGrom is just like in pain and they don't know why.
They know why. They're not telling us why.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, they're not giving us an official diagnosis, and they're saying that there's nothing on the MRI that would indicate anything. So we don't.
He's due for another one on the 13th. So
very, very good. So things are really bad right now. And you know, obviously this latest stretch of play is basically, there's no excuse for it. The team is playing like crap and it's really bad. But a big part of this is every team, even the really good ones, go through some stretches where they have a losing streak. Every team over the course of a 162 game season will have a losing streak eventually, even if it's not like, you know, a 10 game losing streak or whatever, they'll have a period that's bad. The problem is that the Mets did not build up enough of a lead when they had a chance to weather a losing streak like this. Instead, a losing streak like this dooms them more or less, which is not good. because they had every chance to build up a sizable lead in the NL East because the rest of the division was under 500 for the entire first half. So the Mets could have easily built like a 7-8-10 game lead, and they just didn't. They treaded water, and this is what it gets them, because they can't afford to lose six in a row or whatever, because then they'll be in third place, and here we are. We said, like, but, literally, I mean, said
the
last
the
week.
The Pirate series was really what killed them.
Yeah.
I don't want to, again, excuse them, but the early season where pretty much the entire roster was injured and we were having schedule issues between COVID cancellations and weather postponements. And I mean, that to me affected them very early on.
Well, even I called it back then. I was like, they look like the 2015 Nationals to me. Yeah. And I called it back then. And now all of a sudden, everybody's saying they're the 2015 Nationals. I was like, where were you months ago? Right. Get on my level, everybody.
The vibes were already there.
The vibes were totally there.
The vibes were pre-laid. And like, I just feel like I'm taking crazy pills, because I literally said on this podcast last week, every team is capable of a 6-game winning streak, no matter how mediocre they are, even the Phillies. And if the Phillies rip off a 6-game winning streak, the Mets are toast. And look where we are. It literally happened.
They're at 8 games right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what was also frustrating, is everybody's like, they're in first place. The National League East is so bad. It's fine. No, it's not fine. It was never fine. Even McCann was like, we can't keep saying that. Well, where was that months ago? He's like, we need to start showing urgency. Where was that a month ago? You let these teams hang around. They made trades at the deadline because they thought they were still in it. And now look what happened.
They didn't make enough trades, though.
No,
that's like another, almost like another can of worms.
No, I mean the other teams made trades.
Oh, the other teams made trades. I was gonna say the Mets made like two trades, one trade,
one big trade.
Well, Rich Hill, I guess
Rich Hill, I guess two trades.
But like, we needed more starting pitching.
We needed everything.
Bullpen. Just because the depth has been so tested. Not just tested, it's been failing. Everybody's been getting injured. Everybody. So you really needed, to me, the priority was starting pitching no matter what, because I feel like we've been pitching with 3/5 of a rotation this entire season, whether it be DeGrom, Walker, and Stroman, or DeGrom, Walker, McGill, or Walker, Stroman, McGill. There has not been, I don't think, one week where we've had, not one week, two turns in the rotation where we've had the same five people. It feels like. I could be wrong, but that's what it feels like.
Well, in April now, it was. In April, they had the same rotation for a while to start the season.
Weeks. I was going
to
say for like two turns and that's it.
But I was ranting in Slack the other day. They have nobody who can go past five innings.
Yeah. No.
Stroman goes six.
Which is also very bad.
Yeah. Like, you have an entire rotation of like five and dive guys.
Which is not sustainable for the bullpen at all. No. You can have those guys as your 4 and 5 starters, but you can't have those guys as every starter.
As the entire rotation. Like, Carrasco could be good, but he's not stretched out.
No.
So you can't have him go past the fifth inning. Walker's clearly exhausted because he hasn't pitched a full inning in a full season in a couple years. So he can't go beyond five. McGill has fallen apart after five, which was very obvious the last game. So, and then you wonder why, you know, Castro isn't as good. Familia isn't as good. Diaz isn't as good, because you keep going to the same guys all the time.
They're stressed. And considering bullpens in previous seasons, this bullpen has been, I think, better? Really good, better, except now they're more taxed. They're way overtaxed
now. It's only a matter of time before, like, May and Loop are the only ones who have been really good recently. And how long is that going to last?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like they've, of like the offense, the defense, the pitching, they're the starting pitching. They're the group that's been the least injured,
which is shocking,
which is very shocking.
It's amazing. I mean, like they did go through. It's been more the long men that have been injured. The long men and spot starters, because like Gazelman, Sean Reed, Foley, like all those
Peterson. Oswald.
Well, Peterson was never in the bullpen.
He was no, that's true. I'm sorry.
Those guys have spent time as long men, and those are the guys. Those are all the guys that have gotten hurt. But the high leverage guys have all been healthy this year. Yeah. The only injuries were both Seth Lugo and Drew Smith started the season on the injured list, but they are both back now. And so the high leverage guys have been remarkably healthy all year.
Familia, I think, was on the IL.
Yeah. Familia was on the IL for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was like the minimum, and then he came right back.
Because he had like a hip impingement, I think. They're gonna start getting hurt if they keep being overused like this. I mean, just in the past week, I think Aaron Loop threw 3 days in a row. I think Trevor May threw like 3 out of 4 days. And these are in games that they're losing because they have nobody else.
I mean, this is, even if they're not injured, they're clearly fatigued right now because they've carried this team because the starters haven't been able to go long. That's all there is to it.
So
bravo to the bullpen.
And the person they did trade for, Rich Hill, is another 5-and-9 guy. Like, that does you no good. Like, yeah, great. He's a healthy body that you can put in the rotation.
But he doesn't give you the innings.
He was literally the best starter last week. He was the only guy that didn't give up more than one run last week. Which
that's our again, new bar.
Yay, Dick Mountain.
We need more depth, period, but we need more length from our starters. Yes, that is a thing. But I still put this squarely at the feet of the offense, regardless, because all of the games in the past week, they only won on Wednesday. So they lost 3 out of 4 to the Marlins, and they were swept by the Phillies. All of those games were decided by 3 runs or less. All of them. So none of them, they weren't blown out in any of them.
And then the Marlins just got absolutely destroyed by the Colorado Rockies.
Yeah, literally. And Keith was on and on about the scrappy Marlins. They're bad.
The Marlins are bad, but they always give fits. The Mets always have fits with them.
But then how can
I don't know what
easily
I don't
them?
I don't know what it is about the Mets and the Marlins, but the Marlins have always been in the Mets' craw.
I'll say that they always play like their stupidest games of the year against the Marlins. Yes. Like, regardless of whether they lose or win, like the freaking I would argue that the most nutso game of the entire year was a Marlins game, which was although the 15-11 Reds game is a close second, I think. But the most nutso game of the entire season was that Khalil Lee, Jhenashwy Fargas Marlins game. With another like Patrick Mazika, like Jesus Christ, like that game was insane, and that was a Marlins game. It's just like they always play the weirdest baseball against the Marlins in both good and bad ways, mostly bad.
And I know I think this is almost a decade. Oh my god, a decade ago, but that 20 inning horror show, where nobody wanted to score.
But like team can figure it out, though. This isn't a good team.
No. And the freaking David Wright final game where they didn't want to score when no one wanted to score. That was also a Marlins game, by the way.
Peter O'Brien.
14 innings?
Yes. I think it was
13-14. And Austin Jackson was the walk-off hero.
Yes, that's correct.
But you know what? At least they won. At least they won that one.
It was literally 0-0.
Yeah, but it was
nobody
a dumb baseball
game. Scored for 13 innings.
And like, you know, in this most recent series, the Marlins tried to give them a game back by making an error in the 9th inning, and they, or 2 errors, and they just decided they didn't want to.
Well, that's like the Phillies, too. They try to give them games.
They literally.
The Phillies aren't a good baseball team.
Literally gave up back-to-back-to-back home runs in the 9th inning.
Alec Bohm is like horror show at third base.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, Just hit every ball to him.
They had two guys on base with less than two outs. And then at the heart of the lineup just all struck out.
Yeah.
It was
they hit the back-to-back.
Yeah, and then
Alonso
and Carr got on.
Struck out.
Yeah.
No, yeah, they pinch hit McNeil. He like grounded out or something, whatever he does. Then
I think it was ground out, strikeout.
Yeah.
Alonso and JD Davis struck out back-to-back to end the game.
Yeah.
On like the same pitch.
On the same pitch over and over. And
he just kept, he didn't change. He threw the same 94 mile an hour fastball.
Ian Kennedy is not good.
How you get gassed up on a 94 mile per hour fastball?
Apparently he is good against the Mets.
The Mets cannot hit a fastball out of a goddamn paper bag right now.
Well, they even did a bullpen game. The Phillies bullpen is trash and they couldn't even hit Hector Neris.
Nope. Yeah, like it's literally Hector Neris.
They started Ranger Suarez, and then Rojas loses his mind because, oh no, it's a lefty. Oh, and he was like, oh, we're going to get the righties are going to get us a lead, and then we'll take it from there. Yeah, that didn't happen, Rojas.
They cannot hit fastballs that are
freaked.
They can't. I'm frustrated that this is what the manager comes out and says and has said multiple times, and it's just like, okay, now the opposing team knows to just throw complete fastballs. No,
I think they already know that.
They know that, but it's just like they know that, but to hear it publicized to me adds another layer to it.
But when you have to change your entire lineup because you're scared of literal Ranger Suarez, there's a problem.
Well, I mean,
maybe
if Conforto would get a single hit off a lefty, that would be helpful.
Or if McNeil would calm down for two goddamn seconds.
See, the only lefties who can hit lefties in the Mets lineup are Dom Smith and Brandon Nimmo.
But he benched Dom.
Yeah, he benched Dom in one of the games.
You know who we need? We need Wilmer Flores back. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean,
well, I'm not kidding, but you know.
And actually, really Javi Baez is one of the few people in the lineup to hit lefties.
And yet, he's not.
Well, JD in the used to, but hurt. I just don't think his wrist is okay.
No, yeah, he's playing.
JD's,
if you're playing,
JD is hurt still.
Then it frustrates me that he's playing through an injury.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because there was an article the other day that was like his wrist isn't 100% and he has to manage it. Then why is he playing?
Why is he playing? Because that's a slow reaction time in your hand is obviously going to be affecting your batting.
Yeah, and it zaps your power. Like, how is he supposed to swing?
Genius move to not get Chris Bryant.
It's a 10-day IL. Which I think, 10-day, the 10-day minimum wouldn't be good enough. Obviously, yeah. But
yeah,
he should be on the IL.
And then what compounds the frustration is that Zach Scott comes out today and has this presser that makes me want to throw my computer out a window. I mean, okay, I get it. Like, I get the whole, like, I'm going to do a, like, I don't know, like tough love or like transparency and say like, I think saying, you know, there's no beating around the bush, the team has been really bad, is a good thing to say. But he also kind of went too far with it and threw the players under the bus completely. Like, you yourself, you can't just say accountability is talking about accountability for other people and not taking any accountability for yourself. Like, yes, the players are underperforming. That is true. But he's not taking any responsibility. Who built this team? You did. You built this team. Where's the accountability for you?
I was going to say,
like, oh, they're all failing at their jobs. They're all playing poorly.
So
also, they're not managing their injuries right, and they won't drink water or like whatever the hell. And he said most of the time it's compliance issues. So he's refusing, like he's copping for management and shielding them from criticism by saying it's the players who are mismanaging the injuries. No. It is your job to be the adult.
No.
It's not like it's your job to manage your personnel. That is management's job.
And also, like, you had all the, he said, oh, this is a mediocre baseball team. We've been playing mediocre baseball all season. Well, who built that mediocre baseball team, huh?
That was you.
You and your boss.
Yep. Who didn't trade for other players at the trading deadline when you could have? That was you.
I mean, focused on Trevor Bauer instead of George Springer.
Well, that was
whose decision was that?
Porter was out. No, I was going to say Porter, I think, was out before the whole Bauer.
Yeah, he was.
Porter was
out in January, but Bauer signed.
But to me, see, this shows Zach Scott's inexperience at a general managing position. And again, Trevor Bauer still reeks of Sandy Alderson.
Yes.
Just based on past signings, past attitudes, I don't want to say I can't blame Zach Scott, but I think he had less to do with that than we might assume.
And I'm just, it was so frustrating because he had that presser this afternoon as we record this on Tuesday.
That was just horrible.
And in the aftermath of that presser, I saw a bunch of the, and I'm not going to name names, but I saw a bunch of the same old, you know, armchair GM types on Mets Twitter being like, I praise Zach Scott for his transparency and accountability. And I'm just like, he's not going to hire you.
No.
He's not going to hire you. Also, stop being such a shill. Like, I'm so sick of that stuff. Like, stop being such a shill for management. Like,
well, when has there ever been accountability for anything? Has Sandy answered questions about Mickey Callaway?
Right. That's exactly it.
Like, management has never been held accountable for any of the things they did.
Were the Wilpons ever held accountable for anything?
No, I mean, they were held accountable by fans, but fans only have so much power.
Yeah.
So that's what it comes down to.
They were gone that all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, you know, they had a toxic culture. Well, why didn't anybody change it until they were already gone?
And I mean, there still could be the argument that it hasn't changed and it's just lip service.
Like,
but that's also kind of touching on what we're going to talk about next.
Like, you're praising Zach Scott's accountability for the poor on-field play, which, don't get me wrong, like, I'm as frustrated as everybody else about the poor on-field play. But as far as, like, what deserves accountability in your organization at this moment, that's pretty far down the list. Like, where's the accountability for almost signing Trevor Bauer? Where's the accountability for, you know, hiring a sex pest as your GM?
I was going to say, how did Zach Scott get that position?
And another sex pest as your manager for many years. Where's the accountability for how you treat your minor league players? Where's the accountability for any of that stuff? There's none of that. There's been no accountability for any of that. But, oh, yeah, him saying, oh, we're a mediocre baseball team. That's the pinnacle of accountability, apparently.
I was going to say, like, Zach Scott only got that position because they hired a sex pest before him. And they had
to fire him.
Yeah, they had to fire him.
Oh, no, I think he resigned.
He did resign.
Okay.
No, they fired him.
Oh, they fired him? Okay.
No, they fired Porter, like, the next morning.
Yes.
Lord. It was, I mean, okay.
It's hard to keep track of because I think there were, like, a bunch around that time that were getting fired, resigning.
Going back to, like, things the Mets deserve credit for and things they do not. Things the Mets deserve credit for. Firing Jared Porter very quickly after the news broke. Things the Mets do not deserve credit for. How Sandy Alderson talked about his firing after the fact. Do not forget. Never forget the fact that Sandy Alderson was pissed about having to field questions about this whole thing. He acted as if it was an inconvenience to him. And that this was some sort of, like, lynch mob coming for him.
See, and that's why I can't give credit to the Mets for firing him quickly. Again, it shows that Sandy Alderson does not care about certain perspectives when hiring people.
Yep.
He should not have been hired in the first place.
And they said the culture would change, and there's been absolutely no evidence.
Again, it's lip service right now.
And not just from
the Mets perspective, it's just all of baseball. All of baseball is lip service right now.
Oh, and 100%. I just would love the types who are praising Because it's the Venn diagram between people who are like tweeting about how much they loved Zach Scott's presser and how it showed accountability, and like the like Uncle Stevie Twitter, like that's ugh, that's a circle. That's a circle.
And the and people just, who are mad at Pete too.
Yeah, yeah. And the same people who are mad at Pete, because sports, and we talked about this last week. This circles back to the email that we got last week about the Kumar Rocker situation. This is all designed to set you up to be anti-labor in every situation and pro-management. Mm-hmm. Every situation. And I would just love these people to tell me what evidence there is that this current regime is any different than the previous regime. There is currently one piece of evidence, and that is the Francisco Lindor extension. What else have they done? Point me to it. What else have they done besides extend Francisco Lindor? And I'm not saying that's a minor thing. Like, that was great. What else have they done besides the Francisco Lindor contract that is any different than what the Wilpons would have done so far running this team? What is different?
Clearly, they're still having strength and conditioning issues.
They're still mismanaging and injuries and lying about it. They're still not paying their minor league players, despite now having the richest owner in the sport. They're still screwing up their draft very publicly and doing lol Mets shit all the time. They're still, you know, like
not taking money at the deadline.
Not taking money at the deadline of like cheaping out and signing James McCann instead of JT Realmuto. That's like the most Wilpon thing you could possibly do. They're still doing, they're still acting exactly like the Wilpons would have acted. So how are things different? Where is the accountability?
Again, I think that's also part of Sandy Alderson's trying to his frugality, and that needs to change. Just like when he was first named president again, I was like, okay, this is cool. But at the same time, it felt like a rehash of things that were long gone and shouldn't have been addressed, just because it's a new culture. You kind of don't want to have that same old, the same old, same old. Yeah. And yeah, it just,
like,
to me, it was a nice nostalgic move, but it was not the right one.
And I get you needed like a person, like a baseball mind. If you were going to bring in all new people, you needed somebody who's been around the game and could like kind of help steer the ship. I get that. But besides Alderson, like, I think all their they didn't overhaul the minors, which no, they said they were going to do. All those guys are still there. So.
And the minor league players are still treated like shit.
Yeah, they're still there. The Cyclones are awful this year, which they probably should never have fired Fonzie.
And it was brought into the spotlight, and we just got a Steve Cohen tweet saying we're looking into it.
Yep, I think. Yep.
And hey, you know, it shouldn't have taken this long to have looked into it, since someone did the numbers for you and did the research for you. Yet nothing's been done.
And we will circle back to the minor league issue in the second half of the show for sure. But one thing that I will say is another thing I've been seeing a lot of from the Uncle Stevie crowd, for lack of a better phrase to call them, is like, oh, you know, have some patience. This was always going to take time. You know, it's his first year. That is such revisionist history. It's incredible, because when he came on, the immediate like tenor around the team was always that we are going to win this year, and we're going to win now. We're going to win a World Series within the next 3 to 5 years. And as things stand right now, with the way the state of the team right now, it is hard to envision how they can build back up to contention next year, given the holes that they have.
Yeah, they did. They didn't. They tried. I get it. They bought in Lucchese. They bought in Yamamoto. Like, these are major league quality arms that got hurt. I get it, but they're also not people that you should have built all your hopes and dreams around and just assumed Syndergaard would be fine, Carrasco would be fine, Jake would be fine the entire year, Walker would be fine the entire year. Like, they kind of half-assed it again. That's all it comes down to, is obviously, they put all their eggs in the Bauer basket, and that blew up in their faces. And this is what you get.
Yeah. I don't want to hear that, like, oh, have some patience. You know, it's his first year. Like, they were supposed to win this
year. And he said he was spending money. the only person he spent money on was Lenore.
Like, I'm going to need to see more. Like, I'm not, like, you know, again, like, I'm not, I don't know.
It's a nice big splashy move. Lindor was a great splashy move, but there was nothing built to support that move.
That should have been the start.
Yes.
And, like,
and even if you didn't sign anybody that, like, of that stardom, there still could have been much better support, better starting pitching, obviously better minor league development, since our farm system's pretty, there are some great prospects, but it's very top heavy. And then you kind of fall down.
Well, and then Walker, did they even realistically think this is what Walker would be?
Like, no, they saw not first half Walker. I mean, like, they got lucky with,
they got very lucky.
They got lucky because, as we've said, obviously, like, luck is the only reason that Trevor Bauer is not our problem. I mean the Mets. He's obviously a problem for baseball, not just for the Dodgers. But the only reason that the Mets are not saddled with that is luck, not because of any lack of desire and
his choice.
And on top of that, like, Taijuan Walker pitched just as well as Trevor Bauer in the first half on the field, just as well. So the Mets actually got Bauer level, air quotes, production from the guy that they signed instead. So they got very lucky. And, you know, now things are regressing. But, you know, the Dodgers, look at them. They have the depth that it didn't even matter that the star pitcher that they signed is out for, you know, the foreseeable future, possibly out of baseball forever, hopefully out of baseball forever.
Hopefully. Cross your fingers.
They're able to just wash their hands of it and walk away.
They've built that depth up for years, and we've seen it year after year after year. Someone goes down, someone comes up and is good in their place. Not only that, but they spend the money to do it. They have been one of the highest payrolls in baseball for the past, I don't know how many years, at least I would say five, if not more.
In order for me, I mean, like, again, with regard to the on-field product, I am not necessarily completely out on the current regime, because, like, I will, you know, give them some time, I guess. As far as the cultural problems, my patience wears much more thin. But as far as the on-field product, I'm going to need to see Cohen go significantly over the tax next year, because you have Robinson Cano's money coming back on the books, and there is no way to avoid going over the tax and fielding, like, a playable baseball team. There's just no way to avoid it. So I'm going to need to see that next year to feel okay about the on-field product and the direction of the team from a purely baseball perspective.
I don't even know where you.
Yeah, there's like where you start on that.
I know, like, everybody was like, you couldn't have predicted the entire team not hitting for an entire season.
That's,
but you kind of could.
You could, but at the same time, you have McNeil, who was one of the best hitters. You have Alonso, who was supposed to be very
Conforto.
See, I can't, everybody's like really hating on Conforto, but he had COVID earlier this year. And if he had it in like any sort of severely, that messes with you so much.
Well, and screw him for not getting the vaccine on top of that.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I have no sympathy for him. I'm sorry.
Support for this episode comes from Adidas. We all know when you go on your daily run, you need to feel progress. But every time your foot hits the ground, braking forces slow you down. But what if your running shoe could turn these forces into forward motion? Adidas explored 5 million lattice variations to find one cell that redefines what a running shoe midsole can do. Their 4D Forward running shoe is designed to move you forward by turning vertical pressure into forward motion. Every single stride. Adidas 4D Forward, designed to move you forward.
Thanks to T-Mobile for supporting this episode and for keeping baseball fans around the country connected to the game. Because when you're on America's largest and fastest 5G network, you get more than great coverage. You get to stay close to your favorite team, whether you're at home or on the road. In other words, T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. Make the switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to Open Signal Awards based on average speeds and USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
How they can possibly plug all these holes or like improve this team from where it currently stands in the offseason is a whole nother discussion that we will have on a different show. But for now, we'll just wrap up this discussion, this Mets part of the show, with just me asking you two, like, are the Mets toast? Like, are they actually done?
Yes. They've shown me nothing the entire season to tell me they're not.
Like, I don't know.
That's fair.
I'm honestly,
on paper, they're not toast, right? Like on paper, they are
They need DeGrom back and they need Lindor back.
That's the problem. Their whole team is DeGrom and Lindor. That's become increasingly obvious, is their whole team is DeGrom and Lindor.
But like, and on paper, they're not toast because, you know, a 2.5 game deficit is not that much, but they're playing like they're playing. Like, they're about to play the Dodgers and the Giants and the Dodgers and the Giants and the Dodgers and the Giants again.
It's a deathly 2 weeks back-to-back series with them. Back-to-back series with them.
I think I'm at about like 90% toast, but if they sweep the Nationals, I will come back to, I mean, I'm going to, because I'm a stupid mark, I'm going to watch the Mets no matter what, because I always do, because I don't know. I like pain or something.
Bad baseball is better than no baseball.
Yeah. I have a chronic brain disease and it's called Mets fandom and I can't, it's incurable. It's an incurable disease. And so I'm going to keep watching the games because I have nothing better to do with my life. And so regardless, I'm going to watch, but I am, like, we've been through a lot of losing seasons. I watch plenty of Mets games in doomed seasons, even like mathematically doomed seasons, which this is not that yet. But yeah, in order for me to be like, they're not like, for me to start believing at all again, they need to sweep the Nationals and they're already losing the first game. So whatever. But yeah,
I don't know.
I like, think if they fail to do anything better than 2 out of 3, like, and they really should sweep, then if they don't do that, then I think they're toast.
Like, yesterday was the anniversary of the Michael Conforto shirtless game. And I don't see that magic here. It's missing.
Like, I think honestly, a lot of it was Lindor's presence.
Yes,
he brought something.
Still there.
He's still in the dugout, but that's not the same as being on the field.
It's not
the same. Like his defense was so sterling. I mean, obviously, I shouldn't say it was sterling. He did make some errors, but overall, considering past defenses over the years, which are some of the worst in the National League, it was one of the best this year, which to me, I still could not believe that when I saw it.
Yeah.
But he improved the infield defense so much. Yeah, Diaz said he missed his presence because Lindor would come and talk to him if Diaz was not doing well. Just obviously this, just to reiterate, this team misses Lindor. This team misses DeGrom.
Yep.
Yeah, they do.
There's just no getting around it right now. No. Like, I get the saying, like, you're never as bad as you look when you're losing. You're never as good as you are when you're winning. Like, you're somewhere in between.
Mm.
But so the in-between is a mediocre team that just could never get out of its own way.
Yeah, the in-between of, like, when the Mets were winning and when they were losing is still pretty bad because
they were going on, like, magic, like Mazika and Peraza and like
the bench mob.
Yeah, the bench mob being,
they were like treading water before. They were not like at no point this season where did the Mets go on a completely dominant stretch where they won like 7 games in a row. That never happened.
No, because you're relying too much on Jose Peraza and Patrick Mazika.
And I mean, obviously the bench mob did its job and did it well.
And we thank
them
for
that, but it's not sustainable.
No.
And it was getting exposed just before the starters started coming back, which they haven't made much of a difference at this point, but
yeah.
I don't. I have the bread in the toaster. I'm just waiting for my toast.
I have the bread in the toaster. That's the name of this show. Already penciling that
it's,
in.
It's loaded up. You know, you put the little handle down, and you know you hear the little yee because it's warming up the toast.
Yep,
that's just waiting the state. For it to pop.
That's the state. If they sweep
and hope
it,
it's not burned.
If they sweep the Nationals, you can like stop the toasting early, and then maybe you'll just have some warm bread. They'll be sitting
have
on the
that,
precipice.
Have that just before it turns that nice, perfect golden brown. That's just crusty.
Yeah,
on the
it's
top
just like
and
a little
soft,
a little crispy on crispy. The edges.
Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of offended by the expression toast now that we're talking about it because I enjoy toast.
No, I'm just that's not it, yeah. You know what, Linda? You're the one that started this analogy.
No, I did.
No, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, toast.
Yes,
that was me. I take full responsibility.
You started it, but no, you took it literally. Not literally.
Well, I did.
But you brought the food into it.
But now that I'm thinking about it, toast is delicious.
Oh my god!
The Mets are not delicious.
Mets are not delicious. The Mets are
far from. I want to spit the Mets back out at the moment.
Speaking
of burnt toast. They'll be burnt toast because that's no good.
Speaking of things that are not delicious, and I want to spit back out. Major League Baseball and Barstool are in talks about a possible broadcast deal with a focus on in-game gambling, according to reporting from the Post. So that is a thing that dropped, I think, yesterday morning. That prompted a whole nother round of like Barstool discourse that I just was not excited about. So this sucks on multiple levels because not only does this represent the continued embrace and integration of sports betting into the fan experience, which I do not think is a positive thing at all. More importantly, Barstool is trash, known trash, and MLB is just embracing them.
I mean, Hannah Keyser, I think that's, I'm sorry, Hannah, if I'm mispronouncing your name, had a set of tweets about a year ago that just to me was the epitome of why Barstool is so terrible. And just to kind of paraphrase, the problem with Barstool isn't just that it's a cesspool of racism and misogyny. It's that popular people and brands promote it, proving that talking about sports is still one of the best ways to launder bigotry into the mainstream culture. The reason sports culture often still feels oppressively and exclusively straight white male is because for a lot of people, that's the appeal of sports. Of course, there's a business model that caters to that, but you don't have to lend it credence. And she wrote that over a year ago, and it's just, it still describes Barstool today.
Still.
Couldn't be, especially today, especially with even if this deal doesn't go through, that they're even thinking about it shows that everything she said is still there. And everything that women are complaining about, people of color are complaining about, even there are plenty of straight white men complaining about it too. So it's bad. It's bad for baseball.
Well, you can't claim you want to be more welcoming to fans and like more welcoming to minorities, be more welcoming to women, and then get into bed with Barstool. You can't have it both ways. You literally,
and then poop this out.
Yeah. They like Portnoy is literally a cartoon villain at this point. Has he said the N-word? Yes. Is he a homophobe? Yes.
Yes.
Has he made a rape joke?
Yes.
Like literally, like the only thing he doesn't do is kick puppies, and I wouldn't put that past him now either.
Well, he referred to the woman that tackled that guy at, oh my God, which team was it? I think it was the Dodgers game.
Dodgers. Yes.
The Dodgers game. He referred to her today as a rocket.
Yeah.
Basically, and has this photo of her in like kind of the most sexualized photo of her, not one of her tackling the jerk runner on the field, but this, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh my gosh, I can't remember the word.
Basically, she did a badass.
Picture, yeah,
she did a badass thing, and Barstool's reaction is, "Oh damn, she's a smoke show."
Yeah, yep. She's hot.
Yeah,
that's like, all.
This well, if you're hot, you also deserve to get raped, according to Portnoy.
Oh, yeah. There's also that. So you can't be ugly because then you can't be involved with them. But also you can't be hot because then you deserve to be assaulted. So
yep, his exact sure. quote, even though I never condone rape, if you're a size 6 and wearing skinny jeans, you kind of deserve to be raped, right?
Okay. Good.
So, yeah, but, oh, baseball
that's
so
what MLB
welcoming.
Wants to embrace right now.
Yep. It's when their current Cy Young Award winner is on administrative leave for rape.
Yep. It's like, I just like.
The hypocrisy and the lip service. Just, it's everything, all of their initiatives for inclusion are lip service.
Well,
that's what I took it as immediately.
How many of those guys on the Dodgers who don't want Trevor Bauer in their clubhouse supports Barstool? Who makes rape jokes?
The only one I've seen, and I love him for this, Stroman has been liking anti-Barstool tweets. I love him so much. So you have at least one major league player that is not for this.
He feels like the only one though, because like
I know
even
he
the,
does.
Like, even the ones who are like usually cool about stuff, like even the ones who are not, you know, and you know, the bar's kind of low here, let's be real. But the ones who are like, you know, not openly like anti-vaxxers and like openly homophobic and misogynistic on a daily basis. By the way, pour one out for Aubrey Huff's Twitter account. speaking of which. But like
do we even, have to? No, we don't.
Even those dudes like still like will follow Barstool and like consume their content because it's just like it's just bro stuff. Like that's really what it is. It's just like it caters to bros. It's specifically for cishet white dudes. And that's like, and again, it just sends the message that this is who baseball is for, and all the players perpetuate it because they're all mostly that demographic.
Well, and there's
like Jeff McNeil has like been, you know, like he doesn't necessarily like go out there and say Barstool is the greatest thing ever, but he like wears Barstool hats and like,
and I think he goes golfing with them all the time.
Goes golfing with them. And like, so it's like even like the, you know, pretty otherwise like pretty normal and good ball players, like all felt like if you look at my, cause we, a few folks I'm in a group DM with, and I did like an exercise recently where we like challenged each other to like look at our mutuals and which of them follow Barstool and see who could have the lowest number, basically. Like, oh. I follow the fewest people that follow Barstool, and for me, like, I was really shocked at the number of people that I follow that follow Barstool until I went and looked which ones they are, and it's all players.
Of course.
Yeah, it's like, it's and like Steve Cohen and Brody Van Wagenen and Howie Rose and
of
yeah,
course.
Like, and like all the Mets players.
Speaking of the Mets, I'm just going to interrupt this for a second. The game's been suspended and will resume tomorrow at 4:10 p.m.
There you go.
Thank God.
They just cancel it. Like, who cares?
Well, do they have to play?
Well,
they're still numerically in this.
Now, Louisville. Oh, there's a way you're supposed to pronounce it from the South, and that's not me.
Sorry, no, it's Louisville.
Okay.
I don't care what the South thinks right now. They're fucking with us on the vaccine. No.
No. Okay. So Louisville assistant AD, I don't know what that means.
Athletic director.
Yeah, has told students to cease NIL involvement with Barstool Sports. Now, this is the message from University from Louisville. We are advising all student athletes to cease involvement with Barstool Sports in terms of NIL activity. Barstool Sports does not comply with University of Louisville policies, and it does not comply with the criteria outlined in the Kentucky Governor's executive order. If you have any questions, please contact blah blah blah. Thank you. So if a college can say, please do not get involved with the
not with just oh my god, not just any college, but Louisville.
I'm
sorry, this is the first I'm hearing it, and I am shocked.
Yeah, so they can send this out, but then baseball is like, let's jump right in with 2 feet. That's who we want to get involved with.
He also has this like sketchy financial, not like just gambling, like stock. He's got a thing with the stocks too.
Yes.
I don't know what it is, but he's very
he's
hypocritical.
Some brain genius stock master. But
he's very hypocritical about that too. I can't remember what it is.
College football isn't exactly known for its standards.
Oh God, college football is terrible.
But here they are.
Probably, I would say worse than MLB. Yeah, football, but, to me, football is way worse than MLB.
But somehow they're still able to distance themselves from Barstool.
Especially Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
Louisville, guys, in Kentucky. I have so many issues with Kentucky, starting with Mitch McConnell. However,
it's just like, I don't know, like,
it's Kentucky. They have a good view on this.
I mean, I'm sure there's probably like a sleazy something to this that I'm probably missing, but at least like the PR is there.
I don't know. The PR is there. To me, that's much more of a statement than like every other university that has a major, that has a Division I football team.
Yeah.
And it's just like, not only does this show like just a complete lack of regard for like a big part of your fan base, but and like sends the message that they don't belong. It's just like, this is just such a like ball, like such an open cash grab. And it's just really sad. It's just like demoralizing. Like
you could get cash if you just reached out to the people mm-hmm. you've been disenfranchising this entire yep. time.
Yeah, we would like to spend money and we would like to feel involved, but Rob Manfred and his commissioner's office just continue to discourage diversity, among other things.
Well,
he's ruining the game of baseball, but that's another can of worms.
Well, yeah. When Luba is their ideal woman,
yep,
this is what you get.
And like the. Make no mistake, like that, those are what Barstool adjacent people look like. Like mm-hmm. Rachel Luba and Alyssa Rose are like the type of people who love Barstool.
Yes.
Because if you are the type of person who like that culture promotes and you benefit from it, you obviously will uphold it.
Noah's ex-girlfriend.
Yep. She's the one that has that the podcast. Yep.
Yeah. There was some nasty divorce there too with her and her partner or whatever it was.
Oh, oh. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that, but
yeah, now she's starting her own.
Oh, okay. Oh, whatever. Well, good luck.
I don't know why I know that.
No, I just remember that she had this podcast that was like really, really raunchy. But like, see, that's the whole thing. That's, you can go back to Sex Sells, but come on. You want to develop something better than that.
No, they don't.
No, they don't. But you know what? Some of us do. Some of us do. And some of us will keep trying to do so.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. We're not going away.
Yep.
It's just so defeating.
We're gonna hold people accountable. And you like people talk about cancel culture. That's not it. We just want to hold people accountable for the shit they say and the shit they do. That's all there is to it.
Yep. Speaking of holding people accountable, something that is actually getting some traction is the poor treatment of minor leaguers is continuing to get more and more attention. I alluded to this in last week's podcast and talk about it a little more in depth because Britt Grioli recently wrote a feature in The Athletic that we highly recommend you read about this. So this is like, you know, the like third or fourth national article this year about this. And it's one of the more, you know, provocative / in-depth investigative, you know, reporting on this issue. But we'll link it in the show notes. Not going to go into a whole ton of detail about what's in it, but it's just more of the same stuff. Like a lot of minor league players talking about like horror stories about the conditions they dealt with, about like cramming 4 to 5 guys in like a 1-bedroom apartment and sleeping in cars and the terrible food that they eat and stuff like that. And Robert Stock is actually quoted in this article a few times. And Caleb Joseph as well, who was on the Mets this year. So yeah, it's a really good article. We recommend that you read it. And there has been, so we alluded to the Mets because obviously the Mets were one of the organizations called out by name by the Advocates for Minor Leaguers way back in a few months ago now, right? Probably like a couple months
ago. I feel like it was not a few months. I feel it was more recent than that. And I alluded to it earlier without realizing we were going to talk. I knew we were going to talk about it, but I didn't realize that I was talking about it way too early.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, guys.
But they But the Mets were one of the organizations that was called out by name by the advocates for minor leaguers. And obviously Steve Cohen tweeted, like replied to the tweet about it, saying like basically the tweet that was like, the Mets don't pay their minor leaguers housing stipends and they don't give them, you know, pay for spring training and they don't do any of these things that you should be doing. And Steve Cohen basically replied to the tweet saying, okay, we will look into that. And then we heard nothing, like radio silence for a long time. But I will say that there has been some, I emphasis on the word some, progress on this front. Dennis Young from the New York Daily News wrote an article a couple weeks ago that's titled Mets Begin to Improve Housing and Pay for Minor Leaguers. So they started doing it. I will read from the piece. Players in High A Brooklyn will be reimbursed for the $10 night hotel costs they have paid the team this season. At AAA Syracuse, players will receive $300 a month as a housing stipend. And players at extended spring training in Florida will receive back pay for the months that they trained for no pay. So that's like, you know, you didn't pay your minor leaguers for extended spring, so they're giving them back pay for that. The Mets would not comment on the changes. The franchise is still working through its minor league policy changes, according to a team source. So they've like started to do things, but it's not enough because like they talked about like a comprehensive response and like all this stuff. So it's like they're doing like the bare minimum, basically, because they got called out. But it's very easy to just write a couple of checks and solve the whole thing and just pay these people a living wage.
Mm-hmm. And the tweet was on June 27th, so it was a few months ago. It just felt like it was.
It really not feels like yesterday, but it's a couple months ago now.
Oh, God. And that's the whole thing. This could so easily change. What was it? Like, I think $6 or $7 million.
Mm-hmm.
This could change. Yep. That's pocket change for Steve Cohen.
Yep.
But he needs another $91 million bunny, though, Kellyanne.
And you didn't sign Kumar Rocker.
Think of his foyer. His foyer could be buried artwork.
You didn't sign Kumar Rocker. Artwork. There's $6 million right there. Pay your minor leaguers.
Can't with his crappy artwork collection. He's like, and he's into modern art, and it's just like
$91 million bunny that looks like a balloon animal.
So we will continue to monitor that and keep you guys updated if anything happens on that front. In the meantime, at least they've done better than nothing. But it's not enough. But I would like to shout out the Minor League Baseball Advocates, which is an organization made up of former players, including former Met Ty Kelly. You know, they've done really great work. It's basically a combination of former minor leaguers and those with legal expertise, just, you know, bringing this issue to the forefront and forcing this issue, because without them, nothing would get done. No matter how much like people like us scream into the void, or like mostly prospect people who know a lot more about the minor leagues and the conditions that they face, like they can scream into the void all day long, but like that's not going to get owners' attention, like, you know, national articles, which have only come about because the minor league advocates have been tweeting and speaking out. So shout out to them for forcing this issue and forcing change.
And you should follow them on Twitter at MILB Advocates.
Yes.
They're a great follow.
Follow them to get the latest updates on all of this. And shout out to all the players who've spoken to Britt and others about all of this. It's not easy. It's not easy to speak out about this because
no,
they're putting their career on the line by doing that. And you know, and shout out to guys like Robert Stock who are like, you know what? Like, I'm a veteran at this point. Like, I have nothing to lose. I'm just going to talk about how shitty this all is. And well, stick up for the guys that are coming next.
I can't remember who I saw tweet it, but it was a long time ago. When the Mets signed Tebow, they're like, he could very easily use his platform and, you know, show the conditions, how the minor leaguers are treated. Like, that could have been a good thing that came out of the Tebow show. Sorry. But that didn't happen. I think there was too many expectations there.
Oh, yeah. My God.
But there was at least the opportunity there. Like, oh, wow, I was never treated this way in football. Let's change this. No.
No, because he wasn't treated that way because he still had a contract with ESPN. Yeah. So like he didn't miss the salary of minor leaguers,
but he still had to ride the bus, he still had, you know, he saw the way they were treated. There's no way he didn't see that, though.
He didn't see, but he didn't care. He saw it, but he didn't care, well, which to me fits with his kind of surface, nice guy on the surface, kind of a jackass in real life type impression I have of him. Again, speculation, but I get a very charlatan attitude and personality from him, and I always have.
And like Robert Stock talked about this, but like he, you know, he was making like major league minimum or whatever he was making because he was on the Mets for a little bit. And like guys like that who are like kind of shuttled back and forth and they make the minimum, like they're often paying the rents of all these like a bunch of minor leaguers because they're the only ones that can kind of afford it. And so he was basically spending like all his salary on like helping other guys, which should not be a thing.
I feel like Daniel Murphy did something like that too. For all of Murph's faults, he did do something like that.
And which organization was it that was called out by name for not paying the minor leaguers like housing stipend, and then the big league players basically like threatened to like pay the difference?
Was it I know salaries. David Price, I thought.
Yeah, David Price did that until the team was like, oh, okay, fine, we'll pay it. But basically, yeah. That's what it takes. Is players speaking out. And often when it comes to the, like when it comes to current minor leaguers, like guys that speak out are often the ones that were forced to leave the game because of these conditions. And now they can talk about it because like they don't have to risk their careers anymore because they've already decided to quit baseball. So yeah, it's forcing guys out of baseball. Definitely the best way to run a successful organization is forcing your players out because they can't afford to pay rent or eat.
But we need accountability of the players.
Yeah, but
you're
yeah,
missing but accountability, the point, Allison. Though.
Accountability.
They shouldn't have swung at that strike three, so we're going to hold them accountable for that.
Yeah. So.
Priorities.
Lord.
Anyway, even though there's not much to be positive about the Mets right now, I will share, before we move on to walk-off wins and the positive segment of the show, I will share one more positive thing, which is that IWBC reached back out to us, and they are expanding. They're trying to expand their operation to Rockford, Illinois, home of the Rockford Peaches, the women's baseball team back in the day that is featured in a league of their own. And, you know, they are trying to raise money for that. And so plans for the money include an activity center for local kids, baseball-centered education for students of all ages, and preservation of the historic ticket booth in Rockford. And more. So if you guys have a minute to help out the International Women's Baseball Center, please, please, please take a minute to sign the petition, which I will link both in our show notes and in the tweets for this episode. And you can also donate to the cause as well. But you will hear more from us about donations to IWBC in the future. But for now, you can donate to this specific cause from the petition link as well. So if money's not in the cards for you, that's totally fine. But you can still sign the petition. That is free. So sign the petition. I think it'll really help them out. So I'm going to try to get the word out about that. Link this in the show notes and the tweets. So yeah, help our friends at the International Women's Baseball Center continue to do the awesome work that they do in Rockford, Illinois. So that'd be awesome. So thank you guys in advance. Help spread the word. But yeah, in the meantime, we will end the show like we always do with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Kellyanne Healy, what is your walk-off win for this week?
I'm going to cheat and have two. My first one is very bittersweet. I had my last live story time at one of my libraries today because I have resigned and my last day there is on Tuesday because I'm going back to school. And just to see all of my families one more time, the kids were so energetic and they knocked me out. I won't lie. I was like sweating and purple by the end of it, but it was so worth it just to see them. And they're always so energetic and wonderful and engaging. And I'm going to miss them very much, but I really enjoyed the story time today. And my other one is kind of silly, but I love it. So I ordered a Tyler McGill t-shirt a couple weeks ago, and it's coming tomorrow. It's the orange t-shirt with his player name in blue. It's the jersey. And my mother today got me another Tyler McGill jersey with the opposite color. So it's blue with the orange text. It's great. So I'm going to post a photo of that when I get the, orange one tomorrow. I loved it. I was laughing. It's like, amazing. Oh my gosh, it's great. So Tyler McGill, I support you a lot. Just saying.
You probably have the only two Tyler McGill jerseys ever sold.
Hey,
you have to wear that to a Tyler McGill start.
I know. I have to figure out when he's playing and go. I have to see when he's playing, if he's playing, hopefully during the Giants series, because I really want to go to the Giants series to see, you know, Wilmer Flores.
Are you going to wear your Wilmer jersey?
Yeah. Wait, okay. Then I would have to wear, hang on. I got to plan this out now. Cause my Flores jersey is blue and orange. So I think I would wear the orange McGill shirt under it.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. I have to plan this out now. This is huge decisions now. Yes. This is huge decisions.
But anyway,
next walk-off win while I work on this.
We love the Tyler McGill support. Linda Cervich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Well, I'm going to cheat and have two, too.
Yes.
My first one, as I've mentioned many, many times, I love the Olympics. I've been in an Olympics bubble for the past 2 weeks. I'm like kind of lost now. Like yesterday, I was like, what do I watch? Like there's nothing on because there's always a sport on. Like even like I would watch like field hockey between Argentina and India just because it was on and it was amazing. But my walk-off win is the United States women's court volleyball team who won the first ever gold medal for the USA women. And because I love volleyball. Volleyball was my sport as a kid. I played volleyball. And so the game was on at like 12:30 at night. And I was like, I don't care. I'm staying up for this. I need to see if they do it because they were playing so well up to that point. And they just took it to Brazil in three straight sets. They were just playing incredible. And then one of my favorite players, she's been on like, I think, three or four, there's two of them. They were like the veterans of the group. They've been on like the past three volleyball teams. And she got the final spike and got the final point. And then she just started sobbing after she got the point. And then like everybody rushed onto the court. Everybody's crying. Like I'm crying at home. I forgot, like, you know, the emotion that sport can bring out that's good instead of just frustration. So it was just, you know, finally seeing my sport. And I'm so mad that volleyball isn't bigger in this country. Like these ladies have to go play in Europe if they want to like have a professional career. And volleyball deserves more respect. And you can see, and also in an empty arena too, you can hear how like hard they were hitting the ball. And it was just awesome. So congratulations to the court volleyball team for winning the first ever gold medal, and the ladies in general who kicked ass this Olympics.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, but the more USA women won more medals than the men, so suck on that.
I was gonna say, and I mean, I follow outsports, and 56 of the athletes, the LGBTQ plus athletes, earned medals, and wow. It was combined, they came in seventh overall, which was more than the countries that have anti-LGBTQ plus laws, which I thought was fantastic.
That's awesome.
More than any country that criminalizes being LGBTQ plus. That was great. Just women, everybody. Oh. Not the typical, stereotypical male athlete.
Yeah.
Where they were all doing fantastically.
Yeah, see, so anybody who says a woman doesn't belong in sports, that's been thoroughly debunked, and people should just go to hell.
Put their head up their ass.
Yeah, exactly. So go USA women.
Or pull their tongue out over their head and swallow it.
Yep. Simone Biles could like snap you in half. So just.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Just hold
that. Just take we talked about
seats. Yeah, take like a million seats. Well,
no, anyway. Take a seat on the floor.
That too.
The dirty floor that you have spat out your disgusting ignorance on.
So
sit there and wallow in it. Sorry.
Well, that's my first walk off with. Well, yeah, maybe all just the women in general.
No, do your second one.
Yeah, but that's my first one. My second one is probably very similar to Allison's yet again. was the concert at Citi Field we went to this past Wednesday? Yes,
it Wednesday,
was
Wednesday. Yep.
Yes. Well, I was very sad that Fall Out Boy canceled because they were the band I was looking forward to the most. But Vaz, our fellow writer Vaz, said he had an extra ticket. So I was like, yeah, sure, why not? It's a night out at Citi Field with good music. I was like, can't hurt. Like they were music I liked growing up, but they weren't like, oh my God, my favorite bands. But let me tell you, Green Day can rock.
They
totally blew me away. Like I literally couldn't move the next day. I was in so much pain.
I was very sore the next day too.
Oh my God. Every move, I was like, Maddie, can you like go get me a sandwich or something? Because I can't get out of bed. Like, I'm too old for concerts now, but oh my God. The one thing that stuck out in my mind was Billy Joe Armstrong saying, put your fucking phones away. We've been on our phones for a year. Just enjoy the moment.
Yes, that was so good.
I love it.
And I was like, that's so true. Like, what? We've literally been like attached to our phones because we had nothing else to do. And so just to be there with people again and feel the energy of the crowd. And like he mentioned that too, is that, you know, they haven't had that either. And no. That's why they do what they do. And like, they miss that. And so just to like, it was just kind of blown away by how normal it was. Like, even though, you know, I wore my mask still in like the concourse and the bathrooms and stuff, but it was just a fabulous concert with fabulous people, obviously. I'm very happy I went, even if I was a little disappointed that Fall Out Boy had to cancel, but shout out, because Green Day, I think American Idiot came out when I was in high school, and I remember just seeing that everywhere. So it really took me back to like high school, seeing it in everybody's lockers, on notebooks. And
have you seen the musical?
No,
it's very good.
Oh, I'm intrigued now. I probably should go see, because yeah, like those are literally like, it was like the soundtrack to high school. So I was like, oh my God, I'm so old now.
How do you think Billy Joe feels?
I know. Well, he's got to be pushing 50, right?
Yeah. I think is literally 50. He might be 40.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's been that long that I'm at high school.
He's 49. He's 49.
Yeah, okay. He's 49. You were faster on the button than I am.
I was gonna say we won't age him because I'm sure he doesn't want to be known as the 50-year-old yet. But no,
like Kevin Richardson of the Backstreet Boys is 50.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to shriek.
Like, don't say like, that. We're old now.
We're old. Just like Kevin. Oh wait, that's not.
Well, when Brian's son opened for them.
Oh my God, I can't.
Oh.
I heard his song on Pandora. I just can't stand it. Oh, Kevin Richardson is also 49, but he's gonna be 50 in October. Oh, I forgot he had the same birthday as my dad. I forgot.
Yeah, well, when Brian's son was the opener, I was like, that was our first clue.
Yep. And Nick is, I can't, like, I can't wrap my mind around this. Nick is 41.
Oh, yep. Yeah, because he was always the baby.
Yes. Oh. But sorry, that's going off the point of Billy Joel Armstrong and Green Day.
But yep. Yeah, now that I'm like thoroughly depressed, it was a really good concert.
So, yeah, that's so Linda spoiled my walk-off win, because that's my walk-off win as well. I was also at the concert. But I will say that, like, so a bunch of us in Amazing Avenue bought these tickets in September of 2019. We had these tickets for 2 years before we finally got to go to the concert because of COVID, obviously. But, like, the Hello Mega Tour, like, I have never been more excited for a concert in my life, because Green Day is my favorite band, like, bar none. And Fall Out Boy is one of my other favorite bands. And I really love Weezer too. So it was like three bands that I absolutely love, including my favorite band, at my favorite place in the entire world, AKA Citi Field. And so I have never been more excited for a concert in my life. When we bought these tickets, I, like, lost my mind. I was like, this is like if you dreamt up a concert for me to go to, it would be this. And so, you know, the fact that the morning of, we learned that a member of the band's team, we don't know who, tested positive for COVID, Fall Out Boy. And, you know, they made a point to say everyone's vaccinated. So this was like a breakthrough case situation. But yeah, it was, that really sucked. Like, I mean, I'm not begrudging the band at all. They made the right decision for everyone's health and safety. I am not mad at them. They made the right choice, but it still was really, it really sucked. We had these tickets for 2 years and we got to see 2/3 of the concert that we paid for. So I was, like, really bummed out. Even driving up to the show. And, like, I took a day off work for this because it got rescheduled. It was originally, you know, before COVID, it was originally going to be on a weekend. And when it was supposed to be in summer 2020, it was supposed to be on a weekend. And then when it got rescheduled to 2021, it was pushed to a random Wednesday. And so I had to take off work for it. And I got these tickets, just to put it into perspective, everybody, I got these tickets before I even moved to Washington, D.C. So I got these tickets before I even knew where I was going to be. And so Michael and I drove 5 hours to this damn concert, and Fall Out Boy didn't play. So I was, like, really upset. But that said, this is a walk-off win. It was still amazing. It is still so cathartic to see live music for the first time since before COVID. It felt so good. And I really enjoyed Weezer's set. I thought they did an awesome job. And of course, one of my favorite parts of the whole show was, Weezer has this song called El Scorcho, and it's one of my favorite Weezer songs. And one of the lines in the song is, I asked you to go to the Green Day concert. You said you'd never heard of them. How cool is that? And so, like, of course they did El Scorcho. And when they did that line, they literally paused afterwards so the crowd could, like, lose their entire shit, which they did. Because, you know, obviously we were literally at a Green Day concert when Weezer was playing. So it was just so fun. And then, of course, Green Day killed their set, as they always do. I've seen Green Day, I think this was my 6th or 7th time seeing them live. But, you know, it's always going to hold a special place in my heart because, you know, Green Day is a very special band to me. American Idiot came out when I was 14. And it's, like, one of my favorite albums of all time. And it might not be, like, my favorite album of all time, but if you, like, talk about albums that have changed your life the most, American Idiot's number one. Like, that was a transformative album for me in my youth. So I just love Green Day. They're my favorite band of all time, and I got to see them at Citi Field where the Mets play. So it's just, like, a confluence of everything I love. And so even though Fall Out Boy didn't play, it was still really awesome, and I had a great time, and the company was great, of course.
Well, Allison, I thought you made such a good point when you said there was such a tonal difference between Weezer and Fall and Green Day.
Oh my God.
He was like, my glasses are fogged.
I know. Just the vibe between those two bands is very different. Rivers is very nerdy, the lead singer of Weezer, and he wears, like, big horn rim glasses.
Yeah,
and just, like, at one point he just goes, my glasses are fogging up, this is awesome. And meanwhile Green Day is just like, fuck you and fuck all you,
we're gonna lose our fucking mind,
lose your fucking mind, put your fucking phones away, let's go nuts. And it's just like the star, I feel like it just, like, it actually played off each other very well, the stark contrast between Weezer's chillness and Fall Out Boy is just like, I mean, Green Day is just, like, complete over the top behavior on stage.
I was gonna say, like, Weezer, like, they're obviously, like, seeing them in person, like, I only knew like two of their songs, but it was fine because they were very good.
Just to see
how that was good the last song they played, Kellyanne.
Yeah,
I don't but care
to see how good, like, they're very musically gifted. Like, they're great musicians.
They were great live. That was the first time I had ever seen Weezer. And I really enjoyed it. I had seen the only saving grace is I have seen Fall Out Boy in concert once. So at least I've seen them once. But I was eager to see them again. Unfortunately, that did not occur. But it was the first time I saw Weezer, and I was very happy that I got to see them because I really enjoyed their set.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, they're very, like, they're gifted musicians. Like, they were very, very good. But then Green Day comes out and they're shooting off fireworks. There's fire.
Green Day's
on the
just
stage.
Very theatrical in a way that Weezer is not.
They're singing. They were playing like Queen beforehand, like, yep, just to get the like the crowd hyped up. It's like, yeah, it was like just complete like. Like, Weezer relied on, like, their talent and their, like, not to say Green Day isn't talented, but Weezer, like, it was just them playing their instruments and they were very good at it. But then, yeah, it was a whole
and
production.
The bassist was wearing a Mets hat
yes.
The whole time, which was awesome.
Although somebody, I tweeted, like, a picture of him in his Mets hat, and somebody said, that's big, like, I just came from The Office vibes to the ballpark.
Oh my god, it so was. I mean, like, Weezer just kind of has that vibe to begin with. Like, they were all just at The Office, and now they, like, showed up at the concert.
Ballpark.
Yeah.
Like, he had like a shirt and tie on in the Mets hat.
Yep. It was so good. Yeah, so the show was awesome. It was just really nice to get to see live music again. And it was really great.
Now, well, I've made a vow that I have to see Fall Out Boy in concert.
Yep, we gotta do it. We'll find a way.
Yes.
So yeah. That does it for the show this week. If you're still even remotely interested in anything regarding the Mets, you can go to amazinghappier.com. We're still writing even when there's no one to read it because the Mets are bad. We write regardless of what the Mets record is. So you can go to amazinghappier.com, check out all of our game recaps, analysis, morning news posts, weekly meters, all that stuff is there. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can email the show aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servage.
And you, Kellyanne?
At LRBELLARBEE.
You can also subscribe to the show, Amazing Avenue Audio, on your podcast app of choice. Please subscribe to it as well as rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in the-